Welcome to Recovery Chronicles. I'm your host, Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor for Heartview Foundation, and I'm a certified grief counselor, too. And we do this program every week where we celebrate recovery with a capital R. And we usually interview people in long-term recovery. And my special guest today, Royce Irwin, has been in recovery. This is amazing, for 26 years. So God bless you and congratulations, and thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you, Tom. It's it's been a 26 years. I always remember the date and the time that I actually took my last drink, and I think everybody kind of does that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I should add, I'm in long-term recovery, too,
and
you know that.
Yeah. It was in, I was coming back from, I had gone out at AHEC, American Indian Higher Education Consortium, and we were out in Billings, Montana, and I had gone out there for, it was a competition anyway, and that's where I took my last drink, was in Billings, Montana.
Yeah. I hope it was a good one.
It was. Yeah, I had a good time.
So tell me a little bit about your background, your growing up years, your background. That's always a starting point here, where you're from and everything.
Well, I'm originally from North Dakota here. I grew up on the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation in partial North Dakota and Newtown, North Dakota. Pretty much lived there all of my life till I got old enough to leave, and then I spent some time down in Denver, Colorado, and went to school out in Lawrence, Kansas. Was out there for a few years, and then came back here, and then kind of got serious about school. Went to school at U Mary. Got my bachelor's degree in social work in 94.
Okay.
And then I worked a couple years in child protection, and then I did some counseling at a higher education institution.
Okay.
And then I went out to applied for grad school at UND, and then got accepted there, and then graduated there, I believe it was in 98.
With a degree in?
Social work, master's in social work. And then I did social work for a long time. Worked in higher education for about 10 years. And then, just medical social work, and then in the criminal justice system, that kind of thing. And then when I was about 45, 46, I got an inkling to go back to school.
You're a little bit like me. I went back to school for my second master's degree when I was 60-something, and that's how we met.
Yeah, I kind of had a hinkling to go back and get, because social work deals a lot with addiction.
Yeah.
And in my own recovery, that's part of my own recovery was knowing more about it and finding out more about it. So that's what I kind of went into to try to understand better, with the whole addiction issue going on now, how the opioids and all of that. So I did go back and got my LAC, licensed addiction counselor, when I was 50.
Yep.
So that was quite a journey.
Right. That's when we met. We were both trainees, We were both working on our degrees and our license, and we used to chat after class, No, it was fun. So so tell me a little bit about your family background. How did you find alcohol? I assume that's your drug of choice.
So. Yeah, it is alcohol. When I was growing up in a small town, North Dakota, of course, the thing back then, it's a lot different now, but the thing back then was alcohol.
Yeah.
I played on sports teams. I played on football team, track, basketball team. A lot of times when we would leave for the games, or after games, when we get back from away games or home games or whatever, a lot of us would get together. Actually, the whole team would get together.
Yeah.
And we'd have parties.
A few.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and yeah. Then during the summer, we'd, you know, go around together and party around together. And yeah. That's kind of how it started. Mm-hmm. You know, it was fun to begin with. And after a while, it got to be a need.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. more so than just an occasional drink or going out and having a couple of drinks and going home.
Right.
It was daily. Mm-hmm. I mean, a weekend thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you drink all the time. It's just kind of what happened in small town North Dakota for me anyway.
Sure.
At that time.
Sure.
And it just kind of mushroomed from there as far as mm-hmm. my usage goes. You know, it got to be where before I left for and started what I kind of got serious about school and stuff. That's what I did. I just kind of hung around, drank, worked jobs, odd jobs here and there, but. Most mm-hmm. of it was just, most of my money was spent on alcohol and mm-hmm. hanging around with mm-hmm. people that I would hang around with. So that's kind of how it started initially.
It's kind of, as you look back on it, are you kind of amazed that you know, you really completed a lot of schooling, a lot of education and.
I guess I, you know, that's after I kind of sobered up and then I caught the bug for wanting mm-hmm. to be successful at some things, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, because I had a lot more free time.
Okay, so most of that education took place after you had.
Yes. I was using, I did go to school, but, mm-hmm. you know, when you're drinking and partying and my grades weren't the best, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I did some of that. I mean, I did some pretty serious drinking in college. And that's really kind of where it started because I found out what a kegger was, you know, mm-hmm. what a keg party and I had new freedom. You know, I was, I was living with my parents and up until about age 20 but I had this new freedom, you know, and so I just liked what the beer, you know, cause I hung with beer for a long time, but I found out, what it did for me, you know, how it made me feel. But I remember beginning semesters with 15 credits. And then if you dropped classes before a certain date, there was no penalty. You know, mm-hmm. you didn't get a D or a... That was my pattern for a while because of the hangovers or what have you.
Yeah.
You know? When did it start getting you into trouble or how did the alcohol get you into trouble?
Well, it was like I got DWIs, mm-hmm. you know, getting thrown in, PI, that kind of a thing, you know, it had an effect on me where I legally, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing or the alcohol was making me do things I shouldn't be doing, mm-hmm. you know, like driving drunk, that kind of a thing. Getting, you know, thrown in a drunk tank or things like that. But after I met a person that helped me get sober.
A mentor type?
No, my ex-wife.
Yeah.
Okay. I met my ex-wife.
Yeah.
And just moving on to the recovery part of it.
Yes.
Because, like I said, initially when I started out with my education, my purpose was to find out why I did what I did.
Yeah.
Why I acted the way I acted.
Interesting. Yeah.
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 In my own wanting to know more about why I am the way I am.
Yes.
So that's kind of why initially I went into social work is because that's was my purpose. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I could get some education at the same time
a problem solving approach, you know, kind of an intellectual problem solving approach.
Logical at the time, you know. Yeah. So that's what I did. So,
sure.
But what really struck home for me was I think I was in my sophomore year, and I did my associate's degree up at the Turtle Mountain
Community College.
Community mm-hmm. College,
yes.
So I did my first year, my freshman year, and then my sophomore year. And I don't know if you remember this thing that at that time that was going around called the Red Road Approach.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. anyway, Gene Thin Elk and Frank Thomas, I believe is his last name. Anyway, they came up to the college and they did a presentation there. And my recovery was just at that time was sporadic. You know, I would stay off the alcohol for maybe a month or two and then fall off. And that was kind of going like that at that time.
Slips, relapses, whatever.
And because the support that I needed, I didn't know that I needed. Or I was on the way to recovery.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So so as I was going through schooling, these guys and kind of falling here and there and then getting back up, dusting myself off and getting back on the horse and going again or walking again. So then I ran into these guys that had this Red Road approach. And everything they talked about made sense to me for whatever reason. So they had a couple of days there that they presented to us and it really struck home for me. Whatever they were talking about reached in and made sense to me.
Right.
And then after we got done with the presentations, they went out and that we went and sweat it after.
Yes. In Sweat Lodge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Over at one of the elders' homes who had a sweat lodge, so we went over there and sweat it, and then after that sweat, when I came out, I felt renewed. I felt like a new person.
Really, so, a spiritual awakening.
Yes, that's what it was for
fortunate.
Me.
Yes,
yes, and I think the Creator just put that there for me to experience.
Yes,
because that's what I needed.
Yes,
so. That's what I experienced. So after that, it was a lot easier for me to not use.
Yeah. What a story. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was my awakening, so to speak, you know, because what I was doing when I was using wasn't working.
Right.
I wasn't getting anywhere.
Right.
Spinning my wheels.
Right. Did you need more spirituality in a nutshell?
After that, it was a lot of self-help groups, that kind of a thing, you know.
Support just, groups.
Yeah, the daily stuff.
Sure.
You know, the daily maintenance of doing the sweats every once in a while, or, you know.
Yes.
Because I couldn't have those guys there every day.
Sure.
I had to find ways to make it work for me. So what I did was I did that. I found people or self-help groups or things like that in where I could.
Yes.
So that, you know, to reinforce that.
Yeah.
Because if you hear it all the time, it's better than not hearing.
Exactly.
So that was my experience in initially with recovery.
Yes.
So that's how I got to be where I, you know what, this life, if I don't quit this life, you know, it's
death, right?
You know,
and you know, help me say it accurately. There's only three outcomes, and it's either that's death, prison, or insanity, right?
Yeah.
There's probably a couple others in there too, but
health problems.
Yeah. Well, so now you are a licensed addiction counselor, you know. So
yes,
you know,
I am.
Congratulations, and
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and so I assume then that you're conveying to your patients that the spirituality, the side of recovery,
is my own experience. My own experience and what it took for me to. Get past what I was, what my challenges were and where I needed support and that support is essential in your day-to-day living, especially early in your recovery. Because if you don't have that support, the likelihood of you falling back into what you were doing is a lot higher.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Well, as you know, Heartview is a program based on the 12 steps, and so and of course, as they say, it's a spiritual program, and so it's I always underline that spiritual side of recovery.
In my opinion, it's for my own the spiritual piece had a very profound impact on my own recovery. And I always say in my own, and the way I look at it is whatever works for you, do that.
Sure.
Because what works for me might not work for somebody else. But it's important that they find what works for them.
Yeah.
Be it
church, the Red Road,
sweats,
traditional treatments.
Yeah. Sweat.
Yes. That's a good philosophy. There are many pathways to recovery.
Yes.
And
I believe that, each person is different.
Yes.
Their experience in life is different. Whatever it is that they value, that's what they'll migrate towards. And if it's spirituality, that's what they'll migrate towards.
Exercise. It's physical fitness and exercise.
They'll migrate towards that.
And that's an important.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm talking. And by the way, our guest is Royce Irwin, and he was who grew up in, I guess we could say, Western North Dakota, the partial area. But so good to have you on. I'm sure you're familiar with the medicine wheel, and I really love the concept of which I learned from Native American culture, but the concept that of living in balance, that we have a spiritual side, a mental side, emotional side, and physical side, and I've seen the circle divided up into those four quadrants with us in the middle. And it's all about living in balance.
Yes. And one of the things, in my opinion, and where I currently residing and some of the issues there, I think it's a part of the spirituality that we need to be more cognizant of and more push that more. Just as a piece that's missing, that we have churches and we have those different religions there, but if we that's one of the pieces that I think we could actually press
sure.
more as far as
no.
Getting people into recovery, the spirituality part of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. People, unfortunately, when by the time people with addictions get to us, and we're both addiction counselors, by the time they get to us, most of them have already rejected the religions they grew up with, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
I mean, and let's face it, being from North Dakota, most of us grew up with Christian backgrounds. I mean, most of us, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to any other religion or belief system, but I like to remind patients, I make this statement often, I say, look, you don't have to reject all the parts of your religious background, what you learned and what the rituals you practiced and prayer and so many things. You don't have to reject all of it. Can't you find some of it to practice, to incorporate it into your life? So that approach seems to work.
I mean, starting
with something like prayer, for example.
I think it just in my opinion, I believe that if it's an essential part of who we are as human beings. Just as we move through life, like the way I look at it is the Creator has a path for us, mm-hmm. you know, and whatever that path, whatever He puts in your path, that's what you deal with. And recovery and addiction and all of that, we choose to do the addiction, but that doesn't mm-hmm. mean that's the end of it. There mm-hmm. is a way to recover from that because we all have this innate survival.
Yes.
Within us.
It's an instinct. Yeah. Sure.
So, and I think mm-hmm. When you turned to sobriety and when mm-hmm. I turned to sobriety, mm-hmm. I think that was part of, sure. of the decision.
Yeah, I was crashing cars. after the last, and thank God I never hurt anyone but myself, but my last car crash was a rollover. And this was, I'd have to say, almost 40 years ago. But when I came to in the emergency room, it was, I realized that my addictions were going to do me in.
Mm-hmm. And that's
I realized that now it was a matter of life and death.
In a sense, that was part of my decision mm-hmm. because I knew if I kept using the substance I was using, I would end up in the morgue.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
So
same here.
And part of that decision, as far as sobering up, is a survival instinct.
Yes, I think so.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody, a lot of people would agree with that, but it's just in my opinion.
Sure.
I think
especially the people that self-refer. And thank goodness there really are quite a few people who do self-refer. Mm-hmm. In other words, check themselves in as opposed to the legal system mm-hmm. forcing them.
And part of that decision making when we do decide, you know what, I need to turn over a new leaf, mm-hmm. that's an individual decision.
Yes.
That's the person. You can't make somebody.
No.
All you can do is give them the tools.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To go and find their own road to recovery, so to speak.
Yes. Right. Right.
Because it's an individual decision to do that, decision.
I hate to say it, but we've got about 5 minutes left, and our guest is Royce Irwin. I knew this would go fast with you because we've had a lot of good conversations. A couple of practical questions, maybe. But what do you say to the loved ones who get so frustrated with the person who has the addiction, especially because of the slips and the relapses and even multiple treatments? I mean, what kind of encouragement can you give? And I'm sure there's a lot of people listening right now who are in those shoes. How do you encourage the loved ones?
Well, what I would say is that do not give up. Mm-hmm. Recovery is possible.
Yeah.
And part of the support group that actually started up where I'm working is a group that started up recently and it's going strong is parents, brothers, sisters who have a person that's actively using mm-hmm. yes. as a support group.
And Heartview has something like that too. Yes.
And I think that is essential to because they emotionally they go through a roller coaster too.
Oh yeah.
Just with the love that they feel for this person. And then if they're in their lives, if they haven't gone out of their lives yet, they watch this person
destroy themselves.
Killing themselves, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
So that's a grieving period, so to speak, also, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean,
indeed.
Similar to
Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
It's a slow death.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. for somebody to watch that, imagine you're watching your child do that to themselves.
Yes.
Your brother, your sister, your cousin, your...
It's so...
And it affects...
It's grief. Yes.
Yeah. It permeates mm-hmm. everything, the whole family. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So that's what I would say. The two things that I would put out there is that recovery is possible.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't give up.
Yes.
and seek support.
Yes. And you and I are proof that recovery is possible, and it's a heavy responsibility too, isn't it? By our lives, we give people hope. You know, by our examples.
By our examples.
I once said to somebody just a few weeks ago, I said, you know, it's in my. I feel that as an addiction counselor. It's in my job description to smile every day because I'm showing them that recovery is possible, and who would want recovery unless it's a happy thing, you know? You know, I'm not. Yes. I would never call myself grumpy or a complainer, but I'm a happy person.
In my opinion, recovery needs to be celebrated.
Yes, that's right.
It really does. Because it's a life saved.
Exactly.
You know, it's a life saved.
And we've been given a second chance.
Yeah. From all these people along the way that chipped in to help you, to help me recover.
Yes.
You know, like Gene Thinout and the elder that I went to go to the sweat with.
Yes.
And all of the people that helped me, gave me support.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it is to honor that. And honor the recovery.
That's right.
That's the way I kind of.
No, that's a great philosophy. So one more practical question, and then we're almost done. But so for someone who's listening to our program today, mm-hmm. and this show is broadcast twice, by the way. It's also available in podcast form on the KDACFM.org website. But so someone who's listening today right now, and they know they're in trouble. And they've been procrastinating, and they know they've got to do something. What's your best advice?
Ask for help. Mm-hmm. From self-help groups.
Mm-hmm. 12-step groups.
12-step groups. Call a professional. Speak with somebody in the area.
Talk to your minister.
Yep. Talk to your minister. Talk to a counselor. Reach out. Reach mm-hmm. out. There is help out there, but you have to ask for it because people don't know.
So right.
Reach out.
Right. Right. And there's thousands, millions of us out there who are in recovery, not even recovery, but like yourself, you know, long-term recovery. Mm-hmm. So that would
be glad to help.
That would be glad to help. Yeah. Maybe take you to that first mm-hmm. support group meeting, whatever, you know, so.
Sit down and talk with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Royce, I knew this would go fast. Our guest, Royce Irwin, originally from Western North Dakota, and who is now working as an addiction counselor. We need you. I'm glad you're in the business. You know, we close the program every week with a serenity prayer. So let's do that. Okay. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me, Tom.
I sing the song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand. Milk blood to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done. A little part of it in everyone, but every junkie's like a setting sun.